stretch out, but your skin can bring you so much pain. Now I hear you say, you got the best of both ways.
Okay, ladies, let's kick this thing off then. I don't really know how to creatively open a podcast in a captivating manner without sounding like a bit of a douche. So we'll just go fairly standard and a little introduction. My name is Sophie Ryan, and you guys are listening to episode number 2 of a wee little side project that we've started, running alongside the Inside Running podcast. That's basically a look at women's distance running in Australia, with what could we say, a plentiful injection of estrogen is a nice way to put it. Joining me today are two valuable members of our little women's podcasting team. The first woman is the girl Bruce McAvaney referred to as the girl next door, all the way from South Australia, Jessica Stenson. Good afternoon, Jess.
Hello. It's exciting to be on.
Thanks. And the woman with arguably the greatest story of perseverance in Australian distance running history, from the sunny Shire, Eloise Wellings. Hi, Elsie.
Thank you. Hello. Thanks for having me.
How are you, girl?
I'm good.
Off the back of your very busy weekend on the Goldie.
Yeah, it's been a much more leveled week this week, but the Goldie was so fun. I had so much fun.
A bit different to a standard Gold Coast marathon weekend if you're racing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we did remark that a number of times, and we snuck into the call room just so that we could leave our bags somewhere. And Jess and I both said, like, we had this moment where we felt really, really nervous all of a sudden. And it was just the post-traumatic stress that we've had in prior years when we've actually been racing. But then you come to and you go, oh, actually, this actually doesn't mean anything at all. We're just jogging here today. And
there was still we were able to relax about it.
Yeah, there was.
Just before the race, we found a man with an umbrella, and he let us stand under his umbrella until the gun fired. We snuck through the fence, and we were on the road, and we were running.
Oh, that's so funny. But maybe
my tummy nearly got stuck, and we had a bit of a laugh there. But yeah.
Oh, very good. Well, can't wait to get into the Gold Coast stuff in a moment. Just as a little bit of a, part of the introduction, really, we'll give a bit of an update on what we've been up to, where all three of us are going to run through our training week that was. So the first week of July, Monday to Sunday, ending with the Gold Coast weekend. We have a few other little things we're going to talk about, do a couple of race recaps with an emphasis on all that happened on the Gold Coast, especially to our wonderful strong females up there. And then, as with all of our kind of female-themed podcasts, we are going to do a bit of a deep dive. And today's deep dive is all around training for runners whilst pregnant. So as you may or may not have worked out, there's a little bit of a theme here, excluding myself, and that is that these two lovely ladies are both expecting children. So it'll be really great to pick their brains, certainly prior experience, current experience, professional expertise, and dive a little bit into, the ups, the downs, the ins and outs of training whilst expecting. So, girls, let's kick off with our training weeks. Jess, do you want to go first and just give us a rundown of the training that you did from last Monday, the 1st of July, right through to Sunday?
Sure. I've got my Believe journal here. So my training's pretty just random at the moment, and I take each day as it comes. So let's see. On Monday, I had a bit of a photo shoot here with ASICS in Adelaide. So that was a bit of a all over the place kind of day. It started with a sunrise run, which was really just some jogs back and forth, and then I went into the gym in the afternoon and did an elliptical session for 40 minutes, and then finished off with some kicking in the pool.
Beautiful. And then that spectacular sunrise photos.
Yeah, it was phenomenal. It was just a fluke that incredible sunrise happened to land on the day we had the shoot, but there were lots of locals out there sort of taking videos and photos, and it was very bright.
Sounds great. And start to your day.
Yeah. And then on Tuesday, I went back to, the Next Generation gym in Adelaide and did a monofartlek on the elliptical. So cool. I'm still keeping my running session sort of on the elliptical, but obviously there's a bit less impact with that cross training. And then in the afternoon did a few walking laps of the track while Dylan trained with Dan Canala before he headed off to the World Uni Games in Italy. Wednesday, I had a flight in the late morning. So I did a little 35-minute jog from home and then took my flight to Cairns via Melbourne. So that was a pretty long day of flying. And then on the Thursday, I had a conference all day in Cairns with ASICS. And so woke up nice and early that morning to go for another little half-hour jog. And then, I did a little bit of elliptical after the conference. And then on Friday, I did another elliptical session in the gym at Cairns and then flew to the Gold Coast, where I thought it was going to be sunny and warm, and it was buffeting down and windy, and I sort of needed to keep my jacket on. So that was a bit of a surprise. And that sort of was the theme of the weekend, which, it wasn't too bad in the end. I think on marathon day that the weather settled a bit, or the wind did at least, and it ended up being quite nice. But, on Saturday morning, Elsie and I got up nice and early for our 10K run, and it just bucketed down a few times that morning. But it made for a really, an exciting atmosphere, I guess. Just before the gun fired, it was pouring, and then it sort of eased off, and we just, we really enjoyed it. There was music out on course, one guy with his beatbox playing Michael Jackson, so we got amongst that for a while, and then just eased into it, and then enjoyed the last kilometer where there were just people flying past on that final sprint home. And
we kicked down for a 4:43, don't forget to mention. Jess. We went from a 4:44 to a 4:43. I thought that was pretty impressive.
And look, we looked up the results. We came 733rd and 734th. So that's a good little baseline for our babies.
I actually originally thought that I got the dip at the line, but they've given it to Jess. So
I don't know how that happened, but
probably comes down to belly's bigger.
I'd like to look at the photo finish, actually.
Send me those results, Jess. I was going to open and introduce you as the 733rd and 734rd.
Look, to be honest, though, I felt a real rush of adrenaline crossing the line and relief, because I'd found it really hard. I actually, that afternoon, just gave my legs a bit of a rest. I felt like I'd done a pretty decent session. So it really was a challenge, and I still got that satisfaction, even though we were probably 18 minutes or so off our PB.
You debuted actually for the course. That was your PB'd for the course, because it's your 10K debut.
So early.
So that was pretty much my week. And then on Sunday, it was a really busy day, starting nice and early with some of the – well, I started with the live cross to interview the half marathon finishers, and then went on to the webcast with Robbo, Mona and Benita to help commentate the marathon, and then finished up interviewing Millie, so the first place Australian female in the marathon. And then later that afternoon just did another elliptical session in the gym and just created one of my own fartleks for that session. So kind of a standard week at the moment is a lot of cross training with a few little jogs sprinkled throughout when I feel like it's a good idea.
Fantastic. And we'll get into all that stuff that you're doing, the media jobs that you had over the weekend, once we get into the Gold Coast stuff. But that's great week. Elsie, do you want to take us through your week, Monday the 1st to Sunday the 7th?
I have just been running most days, just once a day. I've been trying to pretty much just keep to what I did when I had Indy, because that worked and I felt good doing that. And I feel confident doing that. But yeah, Monday was an easy 60 minutes. I've just been running. I reckon I've been running about 5 minute Ks on my runs. And then Tuesday was 50. Wednesday was 60 minutes. Thursday morning, 50 minutes. And then when we went 10 pin bowling in the afternoon, which I was so sore from the next day, I had my inner thighs were wrecked. So Dom's from bowling, which was quite embarrassing really. And then Friday morning, I just did 30 minutes on the elliptical in the morning. And then, we had our Revy's shakeout run in the evening at Surfers Paradise.
Yeah. I forgot to mention that one. I did that as well.
yeah. Secret training, Jess. Yeah. I saw you there. I'm pretty sure
we ran
together.
Those K's slip by.
Yeah, and then Saturday was obviously our 733rd and 734th place in the 10K. And Sunday, I was pretty wrecked after that too. Like my legs were tight and tired. And but Sunday I just jogged out and to watch the women's and men's half marathon. So I ran out about 15 minutes from the starting line. And then once I saw them, called out and kind of followed them back. Much slower than what they were going, but yeah, just 30 minutes. And then Monday when I got home, I had a rest day. I've been trying to have at least one rest day a week where I don't do anything, which is what I'd normally do when I'm in full training even. So yeah.
Plus, you can't forget those early starts on the Gold Coast. It's such a brutal weekend of little sleep. Very good. Okay. I might just quickly run through my week, which was last week, thanks to Rundy's for my Believe journal that you had open as well. It's reading here. Feels like so long ago because we're recording this on Thursday and it's like all the way back to the start of last week. So Monday morning kicked off with an easy 13K and I did an easy 5K in the afternoon. So I think I touched on, I briefly mentioned in the last podcast that I've been managing a bit of a hamstring tendinosis, so my training is sort of just I'm just working with that, basically managing this injury and doing what I can. So that was Monday, 18k in total. Tuesday morning I did my first session for the week, which was 5 1k reps along the bottom of the tan. I did my warm-up with Josh and we just ran down to the tan. I did my 5 1k reps and then about a 6k cool down to make for 16 kilometers. Wednesday, so I meet Sinead at the tan most Wednesdays. Sometimes we flip it to a Friday, but we generally try and catch up most Wednesdays. And that was an 18k morning with her, and I did a yoga session in the afternoon after work. Thursday morning, I did about 8.5K loop by myself and then picked Josh up from home and we did about 8K together with a little 2K effort sprinkled in. So it's not really a workout but just a pick-up to sort of 3:50, 4-minute K pace, which is a lot quicker than our sort of 4:30 jogging pace. So that was a total of 16K. And then I had my weekly swim at Fitzroy Pool for 2 kilometres. Friday morning, so Friday, Saturday and Sunday was just a bit of a nightmare for us. We actually moved apartments 800 metres up the road, but do not underestimate moving 800 metres even when you're going from a two-bedroom apartment to another two-bedroom apartment. So Friday I sort of got out early because I knew that was all I'd get done for the day, and did a 14K loop around Yarrabend Park in Melbourne and did about 3 or 4 hours of moving, worked in the afternoon and then came home to a bit more moving. Saturday I did do a workout, but I wanted to get about 18 to 20K in for the morning and I just was feeling guilty that Josh was at home packing. So I cut it short at 14K, but I did 2.5K effort on my hilly little Fitzroy Gardens loop, which was, my mind was elsewhere. Like I was just thinking about everything we had to get done that day and I was really just going through the motions. So it wasn't a great session, but done is better than perfect. So that was that. And then basically moving shit all day, which was, just the pits. But anyway, Sunday morning, I again wanted to do about 25K, but I was so tired when I woke up. And I'd woken up at 6 o'clock to try and follow the women's half at the Gold Coast. And I was just so tired, and I finally got out of bed at 10 past 8 and, again, knew how much stuff we had to get done that day. So I got out for 18K, which isn't too bad, and then, yeah, just busy all day. So the week wrapped up with 114K, which isn't too bad, but, yeah, I think Moose has said a few times on the podcast, stress is stress and the body doesn't know where stress is coming from, whether it's training or life or moving boxes. So I had to respect that and just
very do true.
In a funny old weekend. But yeah, I had massive, massive FOMO of not being up on the Gold Coast and watching it all unfold, but really enjoyed what I could get. I'd sort of actually hide from so that Josh couldn't see me checking my phone for results.
Like, just going to the toilet every 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Can we hold the phone, please? Are you bored? Do you need another job? Anyway, so that was my week. And, yeah, that was that. Very good. Before we get on to recapping the Gold Coast, actually, I just want to take a little sidestep and pay our respects to an American woman. Her name, as you ladies both know and have followed as closely as I have, or possibly even closer, Gabrielle Grunewald. And Elsie, correct me if I've said her name wrong, but I think you pronounce her surname Grunewald, is an American distance runner specializing in the 1500 and the 5K distances. She's from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and sadly on the 11th of June this year, so just about a month ago, Gabe lost her 10-year battle with a rare cancer. I found this to be really, really sad. She's only 32 years old, married to Justin, who I believe was her coach up until the time she died, and it being a rare cancer, you know, that there's just not the research and the funding behind this disease. So for, I would say, all of her journey with cancer, Gabe devoted so much of her time and her energy to raising awareness and funds for, she had adenoid cystic carcinoma, which is a rare form of cancer that begins in the glandular tissues. It's most commonly arises in the major and the minor salivary glands of the head and neck. And that's where her cancer began. It was treated successfully, but then returned as thyroid cancer. And then actually as a very, very large tumor in her liver. And that's eventually what took her life. Ladies, do you want to touch on anything about Gabe while we pay our respects?
I never really had the pleasure of meeting her, but definitely followed her story over the last few years. And, you know, like everyone else, was just so inspired by the courage that she showed in the face of the unknown and in the face of fear. And, you know, the legacy now that she has left since her passing with her foundation, the Brave Like Gabe Foundation, and to raise money for those rare cancers. And, you know, it's incredible. And I think it's brought some incredible perspective to the running community. And, you know, I've just, I've kind of, you know, sat down here down under and watched the, you know, especially the American running community grieve. And I've just been touched by how many lives her life and the way she lived it. How she lived it was, you know, so inspiring to so many.
Yeah. It's so true. And I read the tributes and watched a documentary as well. And as you say, that courage just shone through. She didn't let the illness stop her from living life, you know, to the fullest that she could. And the whole time you felt this sense that she was really trying to help others and put that big smile on her face. And it was a really moving and very sad story.
Yeah. I mean, she knew what her outcome would be. She fought so hard. She knew that there was no treatment or cure for her cancer. So she was either going to live with cancer for the rest of her life or it would take her life. And to live with that knowledge, but just every single day fight so hard. And as Elsie just briefly touched on, she has set up a foundation. It's called Brave Like Gabe. You can follow the hashtag or visit the website. And I'd encourage people to do that and learn more about this amazing woman and the legacy that she now leaves. There's actually on the 25th of June, which is her birthday, is the Gabrielle Grunewald Day in Minneapolis, which is just beautiful that And I know that in many other parts of the United States, they are also celebrating that day. And it's a phenomenal event, the Brave Light Gay 5K run. And people are invited to do it virtually to get sponsors and raise money. So, yeah, I think maybe sometime next year around June, we could even do our own little thing back here and get together and rattle some tins and and send some money towards the Brave Light Gay Foundation. But to Justin, her husband, to all of her family, the Brooks running community, she was a professional athlete for Brooks, her friends, her family, her everybody who's been touched by this. I think the Australian distance running community really wrap their arms around you and comfort you at this time.
Well said, Sophie.
Thank you. Anyway, moving on, we might do a bit of a race recap. Jess, you were front and centre, mic in hand, at the Gold Coast Marathon over the weekend. Do you want to give us a bit of a rundown? This is a bit of a women's flavour podcast. So the women's, maybe the marathon, far away.
Sure. Yeah, it was exciting to be involved in another way this year. I just sort of a few months out said, look, I'm not going to be running, but if you have any jobs that you'd like me to do, and, you know, I'd love to be involved in the event because I have been for so many years. And I was actually quite nervous with the interviews and whatnot, but it was a really cool experience. So for the marathon, we had Rhoda Tanui from Kenya cross the line first, and G Millie was closing in on her. Got really exciting at the end there. They were both coming down the home straight together, and Rhoda was just off her PB, so she ran 2:27:56, and I think her PB was set last year in the marathon. So then we had Millie come in a personal best time and a Tasmanian record. 2:28:08, and that was actually under the Tokyo Olympic qualifying standard of 2:28:30. So Millie was really excited. It was her first marathon since we actually ran the last one together at the World Champs in London in 2017. So she's had a bit of a long road to get to the Gold Coast on the weekend, and it was so nice to see her so happy at the end.
Millie was a highlight for me.
Yeah.
After knowing what she's been through the last couple of years, and then coming out and pulling that out was amazing. And yeah, seeing her emotion at the end was just was great.
And just pretty to awesome. Note that she did a 3-minute negative split just about. So that second half, she was coming home like a train.
She is the queen of the negative split. run it back off.
That is very true. And then in third place was Nazret Weldu in 2:28:57.
Quick question. Those two women who finished first and third, did you race them last year, or are they both new to the Gold Coast this year?
No, they were new to the Gold Coast.
Okay. Because sometimes I, no disrespect, but I do mix up a few of the names. Yeah.
I think, actually, Rhoda may have run in 2017, but she wasn't, that was her first win on the Gold Coast.
Very good. Wheelchairs?
Yeah, wheelchairs. So we had Bill Chaffee cross the line first, but then behind him was Madison De Rosario. So she was back on the course where she had a lot of success at the Commonwealth Games in 2018. Obviously the Gold Coast Marathon sort of in reverse to the Commonwealth Games one, but she had a great race in 1:49:35. Brilliant. And then we had Richard Coleman and Christy Dawes. And then if we scoot to the women's half marathon here, that was a great race. It was always going to be an incredible lineup. We had obviously Sarah Hall come from America, so she's run the half on the Gold Coast a number of times now, and I know her goal was sort of to break at 69-minute barrier, which she's still hoping to achieve that at some point. And I think she and Ryan really enjoy coming across to Australia in July. But we had Sinead Diver take the win in 69:46, with Ellie Pashley just behind in 69:51. And then Lisa in third in 70 minutes and 32 seconds. And it was a really close race. Sarah came in fourth. We were following their splits and they were all just basically in a pack up until those final stages. And Sinead, came home.
Drop the hammer.
Yeah. And, she was ecstatic at the finish. It was fun to interview her. She's just had an incredible couple of years, and obviously she ran a very fast half marathon in Marigami in February and then went on to run the London Marathon in 2:24:11. So what a great year.
So I think from my understanding they were running together till at least 10k. I think from my understanding it might have been a few surges both from Sarah and even Lisa at different stages, but it sounds like it was a fairly tight pack through 10K. And I think it might be about, it was perhaps, can correct me if I'm wrong, around 15K that Sinead broke away and Ellie went with her. Is that about right, how it sort of panned out?
By then I was at the finish shoot waiting for them to come home, so I didn't actually get to view it. Did you see it, Elsie?
Yeah, that's about right. Sinead kind of made a break at about 15 and Ellie went with her. She was, when I saw them at 17K, Ellie was only a few metres off the back of Sinead, and that's actually pretty much how they finished as well. Lisa was a little bit further back than that. But when I saw Sinead and she locked eyes with me, I could tell that she knew that she had the race. She was obviously feeling good. She gave me a big smile and she had 4K to go. And I think, you know, coming from a marathon background, when you got 4K to go in a half marathon and you're in the lead, I think she was feeling pretty confident by then. I think mid-race, they went through this really wild storm that no one at the starting line could feel because it just kind of swept over at the halfway mark. But, yeah, so they were all running through you know, really, really heavy rain. It was a really interesting race to watch. I think it's such a big ask. I had a chat to Sarah Hall and she said, you know, she didn't feel that great on the day. And I think it's such a big ask coming from the US and trying to run, sub 69 minutes or, you know, like with that jet lag and everything. I'd love to see her come down a little bit earlier and run it fresh, and I'm sure she would have felt a lot better. But obviously, you know, when you've got four children, it's not always possible. But, you know, she still ran incredibly, and Lisa as well. And really excited for Sinead and Nelly. They were coming off the Oceania Championships first and second, and they're both in really good form and seem like they're just really enjoying it as well.
Just, and so you can tell they all just helped each other to get the most out of each other. It was a very exciting morning.
Yeah, awesome that they were on the start line together. I mean, I think we've, dreamed about that head-to-head-to-head for a little while now, and it's fantastic that on the Gold Coast at the half marathon they could actually line up beside one another and have the smackdown. And, yeah, what a great result.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. And 10K, quickly, Leanne Pompiani took line honours. I think Casey Wood was second or third.
Charlotte Wilson.
Was
third. Yeah.
Jess was 733rd.
Where did she go?
Thank you for including that.
Thank you.
Leanne ran 33 bang on, which was an improvement in her last victory. She's brought that time down, and Casey Wood from South Australia just behind in 33:10, and then Charlotte, who then went on to cheer for Liam the next day in the full marathon, so she had a busy weekend.
Yeah, I think that was a PB for Charlotte from her social media. I think I read that, and she's going really well, Charlotte Wilson. It's a great result for her, and I good times for those conditions by the sounds.
Yes, yeah. So Charlotte's time was 33:54.
Brilliant.
Excellent.
Did people recognise you two out there and sort of speak to you? Like, you know, you're back of the packers, sort of?
Not really. We ran into Deeks. He spoke to us. his Achilles carked it, as in his words. At about the 3K mark.
Kilometer, we saw him.
Yeah.
And he snuck
so
off.
He pulled the pin. He still loved us at the finish line, though. I was a bit worried because we kind of left him in our dust. And then, he was waiting at the finish line. He was all fresh because he'd obviously been – he'd stopped a little while earlier. But, yeah, we didn't really chat to that many people. I think everyone's so in their zone, which is awesome. Really. Yeah. And even we were really the only ones kind of dancing and laughing along to the guy carrying the beatbox. although I'm sure everyone else was enjoying it. Everyone was kind of in their zone. And but it was such a party atmosphere, especially at the starting line. I just had so much fun.
So good.
Yeah.
Thanks for the Gold Coast recap. I think that's pretty comprehensive. There was actually an Athletics Victoria race over the weekend, and that was the road relays at Sandown. I won't go into too much detail because, you know, you've got lots and lots of people out there, but in the women's premier division, Essendon took line honours, followed by Glenn Huntley and Melbourne Uni. And that's a very good run by Essendon because they usually have Charlotte in the team and she wasn't obviously there. So, that's a very solid performance. So that's the Sandown AV relays. And then this weekend there's another AV race, and that's the Victorian 10K Championships at Albert Park. So everybody, good conditions.
Yeah, I've been hearing about that one on the Inside Running podcast. Yeah. I think the boys are all having a big hit out.
Very interesting, that one. Looking forward to it. World Uni Games are on at the moment in Italy. And I think in some of the distance events, they're sort of in the more early stages in terms of heats. But there are a few really great results that we want to shout out. Max Stevens, Jess, how did he go? I know we do focus a little bit.
So
we're excited about our boys as well.
A couple of Team Tempo, my squad, members over there. So we had Max qualify in the 3K steeple along with Maddie Clark. And then Riley Cox had his 10K and finished 10th. We had Izzy Bat Doyle. She was sixth. And then Caitlin at 4:30 a.m. our time this morning qualified for the 5K final. And Katrina Bissett as well came through and got the gold medal in the 800, which is absolutely incredible. So caps off a really, unbelievable season for her.
And do we know what Caitlin ran? Caitlin Adams' time?
No, I'm not actually sure of her time.
And what were the requirements? Sorry, I put you on the spot here, but to qualify for the women's 5K final, what did you have to come in your heat? Do you know?
Actually didn't get to follow it. I slept through the race, but I will be tracking the finals races very closely. But all I check for in the morning is that they've got a queue next to their name, and I'm happy.
Yep. This is another clarifying question. When they're over there, are they staying on like a ship?
They are. The village is on a cruise ship. So I guess it keeps it a bit easier from a security sense. They have to sort of enter the ship and they're in the village.
So funny. I saw that and I was like, that's a really, really cool initiative. They will never forget World Uni Games 2019, that's for sure.
They won't. No, it looks like they're having a great time over in Naples.
Yeah. Well, we eagerly await the results of Caitlin Adams in the women's 5K, amongst others, and wish them all the best. Very good, ladies. I think we're going well. So far, so good. I think we're still recording. This is going great. We might get into the crux of the show, which is a deep dive, and it's what we're going to do every episode. And today's deep dive is relating to pregnancy, and it's specifically the training that we're going to discuss training for runners whilst pregnant. Now, I have written, the only scripted part of this whole show is something I have written. I wouldn't call it a disclaimer, but I just want to open this little topic and I'm going to read it and just say that nothing that we say in this section replaces the information that you are given personally by your obstetrician or your women's health physiotherapist or any other consulting medical professional based on your individual health status, your medical history, your presenting complaint, or the health of your baby. We are just going to have a general discussion It's between three women based on the personal experience of two of those women and where relevant the very general advice from a physio, Jess. So please interpret everything we say as very general and by no means specific to any one woman's individual
name. Yeah, and that is a really important point because every individual is very different. So, you know, your health provider can give information that's very specific to you around what's appropriate from an exercise perspective.
Very good. All right, I'm going to kick off. I do have some questions. Eloise, I'm going to hit you first, and I'm interested to know some of the differences between being pregnant with Indy, your now six-year-old, am I right? Six?
Yep.
Being pregnant with Indy 6 years ago and your second time around. Shed some light on that if you'd like to.
So far, I've pretty much just tried to do really similar to what I did with Indy, although the difference was I fell pregnant pretty much straight after the London Olympics with Indy. So I was still really, really fit. And so I was able to run, a lot faster and longer and like further for a longer period of time through my pregnancy. I ran up until about 38 and a half weeks with Indy until it just got uncomfortable. But, and I, when I say faster, I mean, I was probably, you know, 4:50s instead of 5 minute Ks at this point in the pregnancy. I'm at 21 weeks now. But this time I took us a little bit longer to fall pregnant and I was a little bit less fit. And so I feel a little bit heavier and which hasn't really made a difference, but I think that it will in terms of how long I'm able to, it might in terms of how long I'm able to run for. But for me, it's about I'm trying not to compare how it was with Indy because I, even though I'm doing very similar running at the moment, I'm trying to keep my be flexible with my expectations because, you know, next week it might become uncomfortable. At the moment, it's great, and I, you know, I wouldn't know I was pregnant unless I looked down or unless I looked at my pace. But I, you know, it might be the case where, you know, I will need to stop running and just do other things and do more cross training and elliptical to stay healthy and fit and sane, I guess. And, but, you know, I think at the moment, the only difference is that I started out when I fell pregnant, I wasn't in Olympic race shape. And I was slightly heavier than I was, which is not a bad thing. It's probably more of a good thing. But, I just don't know. I'm just trying to keep my expectations really flexible, as I said, just in terms of how long I'll be able to run for in this pregnancy. But, you know, the goal is to obviously deliver a healthy baby first and foremost, and then you know, obviously come back to professional running after that. And you know, I think after Indy especially, I know that I've got to be really flexible in terms of what my expectations are in terms of how quickly I come back as well, because it all you just never know how your body is going to respond to pregnancy and the different shape and the different hormones and this lack of sleep as well when you first have the baby and the lack of sleep in the later stages of pregnancy as well. There's so many factors that can contribute to, you know, as I say, every pregnancy is different, and already I feel like that this is a little bit different already. I'm just doing really similar things because I feel quite similar to how I did at this stage with Indy, except just a little bit less fit.
One thing I'm hearing from both of you, even just with your week training recaps, is it sounds like it's very much a day by day and a week by week proposition without knowing how you're going to feel the next day or the next week. So I guess you are just very much one step at a time.
Absolutely. Totally. I think you have a plan in your head of what you'd like to do for the week. In terms of exercise and training, I guess, but if you want to call it that. But I think, for me, I know that, you know, if I wake up and I feel nauseous or if I'm really tired or, it's obviously going to change and switch things about, and you've got to be flexible, and you have to be flexible like that as a profession, like as when you're not pregnant, as a profession, like when you're competing and when you're getting ready for a major championship. I think that it's the same mentality. You've got a plan of what, strategy of what you want to get done that week. But if it, you know, if your body's telling you otherwise, you've actually just got to stop and listen.
Yeah. I mean, that's just a message for everyone. Recreational runners, everything is listen to your body.
Yeah.
Mm.
Great. Thanks for that. Jess, this question's for you. It's kind of a little bit two-part. The first one is, you're a physiotherapist, and I know you're very, very knowledgeable in the women's health physiotherapy space. Who are the health professionals that a pregnant woman needs to speak to or seek out prior to commencing an exercise regime? And of course, throughout their pregnancy, who are those people that they need to speak to? If someone's just fallen pregnant, they're keen to keep running, they don't know who to see, who do they need to speak to? And the second part of the question is, what did you think training whilst pregnant would be like?
Yeah, there's lots in that. So I guess from my experience, I sought out a GP who I know has, I guess, a bit of knowledge in this area, and she was fantastic. So quite early on, I just wanted to get some real sort of medical guidance, I guess, and she emailed me a few papers on some of the more recent research. And there was actually in 2002, a position statement was released by the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, which is sort of basically said that 30 minutes or more of moderate intensity exercise, so I guess that's a subjective thing for the individual, on most if not all days of the week is recommended for pregnant women in the absence of medical or obstetric complications. So I guess that's where it's really important early on to be checking in with your obstetrician and or, you know, GP to make sure that you don't have any of those complications. And look, some of them don't present until later in the pregnancy. So at a recent women's health and maternity physio course I did, I learned about some of those complications. So the position of your placenta, for example, placenta previa, where it's sort of over the opening of the cervix, that can restrict your exercise and what you should do. And then there are other a number of other factors as well, but having that sort of good check early on, and then again at that 20-week sort of scan time will tell you if you just need to be wary with what exercise you're choosing to do and how much to do. So yeah, really, who to see, your obstetrician, GP, and then a women's health physio can help with the very specific sort of pelvic floor examination, and, you know, things like incompetent cervixes and whatnot or other issues that can lead you to back right off your exercise as well. And so really trying to find providers that specialise in that area of women's health. The second part of the question, what did I expect with training when pregnant? I tried to go into it pretty open-minded. I actually sort of really started backing off in December to try and fall pregnant. So when I fell pregnant in February, I'd already really restricted my running. So compared to, I guess, October, where I was peaking for a marathon, I was doing probably a third of my normal training load. So I guess I continued running, and at 10 and a half weeks pregnant, we got married. So that was sort of just a busy time anyway, outside of training, just getting organized for that. And I was feeling pretty good right through until 14 weeks. I did a park run, nothing too intense, like I just jogged it. But after that, I just started feeling a bit funny around the pelvic region and ended up getting pulling up the next day with a really sore pubic symphysis, so where the pelvis meets at the front, and went and saw a women's health physio at that point. And she really helped to guide what I should do to modify some of my activities. So not standing on one leg to put your shoes and socks on and all of those fun things. I was moving a bit differently. When I'd turn in bed, I had to take both legs over at once and all of that. And I stopped running for almost a month, and it absolutely came good. And I feel really fortunate because I sort of thought, okay, this is me for the next however many months up until November. And, you know, it was quite tender and was affecting my everyday sort of life. So it was really nice that that cleared up for me. And I continued to cross train, and I've added in a bit of jogging, and obviously up to sort of that 10K on the weekend, and was grateful to pull up without any issues. But I think I'll mainly still be cross training with just a few runs sprinkled throughout, just to look after that pelvis, knowing I've got a bit of a vulnerability there.
Yeah. And so can I just ask you, does it present as like a searing pain at the pubic symphysis? Is that what it feels like? What does it feel like when you're running? What holds you back when you've got that?
So for me, it actually wasn't so bad when I was running. I could feel it, and it felt like a bit of a pressure down there. But as soon as I stopped running, so on this one occasion, I'd pre-organized a run with someone who was preparing for the Adelaide Marathon, and I sort of got through thinking, I think it's okay, and stopped. And then I went to walk, and I was like, whoa, like just separating your legs, or like doing an adductor stretch, you know, where you take one leg to the side. That was a big no-no. And anything that involved basically shifting weight from one leg to the other, it was a really strong pain, very localized to the front of the pelvis there. So I mean, Dylan, my husband, he's had osteitis pubis in the past, and all of my symptoms were the same as his. In bed, if I went to like do that sit up position, yep, to get out of bed, it created a lot of I guess a feeling of strain in that area. And as I said, the putting the shoes and socks on in the morning, I had to sit down and try and keep my legs together. And yeah.
So 10 pin bowling would have been difficult as well.
Oh yeah. Just... yeah. And I had to really modify my gym activities because I'm still doing some strength and conditioning twice a week. And my strength and conditioning, I guess, coach was really good at making lots of modifications to all double-legged activities.
Yeah, very good. Thanks for that. Ali, I'm going to bounce back to you and ask you, considering you have experienced the three trimesters of a pregnancy, I want to talk to you and ask you about the three trimesters and perhaps get a little bit of insight into the differences between each one in terms of what your physical capabilities were. And you can obviously relate back to Indy's pregnancy, of course, the third one, in terms of physical capabilities, how you feel in general, and challenges associated with each different phase of pregnancy.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the first trimester is always, well, for me, it's been the hardest just because you feel sick. And like for most of the first trimester with this pregnancy, I from about 4 o'clock onwards in the afternoons, like I was on the lounge feeling like I was on a rocky boat until I'd go to bed at about 8:30, and so I was basically rendered useless in the afternoons. I had afternoon sickness. I had a couple of hours of power in the morning, where I could get up and go for a run. And I mean, since the day that I knew I was pregnant, I haven't run longer than say 70 minutes. And it's been at an easy pace. I don't think I've run faster than a 4:40. I think the 4:43 that me and Jess did in that last 10K was the fastest I've run in a while. Yes. Thank you, Jess.
You really pushed me.
But yeah, and I mean, so once I got through that first trimester of, and I remember this with Indy too, I started to feel good. And the second trimester for me has always been where I felt a lot better. My breathing is a bit more relaxed. and I don't feel as sick, obviously, and I don't feel as tired. And, you know, you feel like you could do a little bit more. You just go through a bit of a stage where you have a lot more energy and you feel a little bit more normal. And then the third trimester from memory with Indy, I just started to get more tired and obviously heavier. And so, you know, like what Jess was talking about, with the pubic symphysis injury, like that is definitely something that I would be, I guess that there would be a chance that I would get, too. And so you've just got to watch out for, pelvic injuries like that. That so when you get heavier and there's more pressure on your pelvis, you know, you've obviously got to run slower and shorter, and you know, it might be a jog walk towards kind of the final stages of having the baby. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think the second trimester is definitely almost always like your happy place where you're like feeling pretty good and you've got bit more energy and you know, you feel a little bit more normal to do your day-to-day stuff. But yeah, the first and the third are definitely more challenging. And but yeah, it's such a miracle. I'm so appreciative of this whole process, and even my body changing, you know, like you know as an athlete and kind of, I don't know, your body being such a temple of you know, it's your career. And but then when you fall pregnant and you begin to like grow a human inside you, it just becomes this extra special thing where you go, well, I don't care what shape I go. This is absolutely incredible. And yeah, I just have such an appreciation of this whole process, probably even more so now than with Indy. With Indy, I was just a bit green. I was like, yeah, this is what it's like. But yeah, I'm glad to be where I'm at. And yeah, as I said, I think coming back will be definitely a challenge. And I think, as I said, just not having that too high an expectation there of what it's going to be like, and with, you know, trying to compare it too much to coming back to Indy. Because with Indy, I actually had about 4 months off running completely after she was born. The birth was like I had a dream pregnancy with her. The birth was shocking. And I ended up having an emergency cesarean, and it took me a long time mentally to get through that. And I didn't really want to leave her to go for a run. I wasn't thinking about going for a run for a number of months afterwards, before finally I kind of worked through that kind of post-traumatic stress and was able to start running again. And my if I do an out and back course, my out would be much slower, and then my back I had just race home,
run
race,
to the
back,
top.
Race back to get the Indy. I kind of went through that stage where I was I had a bit of post-traumatic stress after the birth. But yeah, once I got through that, I was like, I came back quite quickly. I mean, my first couple of runs, I remember telling Jess on the weekend, I just thought, if I can run under like 17 minutes for 5K ever again, like I will be impressed with that, like the way that I'm feeling now. And
then you look, you know, at your like run was, in Rio.
Yeah, well, I mean, the you know, a few months later, I was at the Com Games trials in Melbourne, and I was still breastfeeding at that stage, and so that was a new challenge and different dynamic to racing. And you know, obviously trying to feed another human at the same time, and then being at the Glasgow Commonwealth Games, I think Indy was about 13 months old. And so, but I have to remember that, yeah, like every pregnancy is different, and I just don't know how my body's going to respond, and just have to go with the flow. And I guess that's all part of having a baby and having a child, is that you don't know exactly, there's so many unknowns, But I think, yeah, you definitely have to put goals on the board so that you've got some drive and desire to do the training. But it just looks so differently. I think you've got to be a lot more flexible. And even training for me before I had Indy, I was so OCD about training at 9:30 and 5:30, you know, 9:30 a.m. and 5:30 in the evening. Like that was, they were my training times and nothing was kind of coming inside that. And then when I had Indy, it just all goes out the window. Like I'd go training when she was fed and happy and, you know, asleep or whatever. And there was some days I didn't get out for my first run until 1 p.m. and then my second run was like 10 o'clock at night. So, but I was happy to do that. And, it's all part of, I guess, the sacrifice of being a parent and then also what you want for your athletic career. And it's why I have so much respect for so many of the, you know, female athletes that I know that do have children and that are, you know, like Sarah Hall, she's got four kids and obviously she's, they're a little bit older, they're older, but they're still, you know, reliant on her and she's still running incredibly. And yeah, so I don't know if that answers the question.
No, that was beautiful. Thank you. And so that our listeners do know, we have a different episode planned where we will dive deep into returning to running after pregnancy and what all that looks like. So it's really nice how you're touching on it briefly because that will form a really nice lead into a deep dive all about the actual return itself. Jess, back to you. The question here, it doesn't have a question mark. I've written the words food, sleep. So what I basically mean is how have some of your dietary or food or nutrition aspects of your life changed, and also since falling pregnant and over the last 4 to 5 months, and also sleep. So comparing, far away, girl.
Well, on the food front, it's interesting because basically since 2012, I've sort of been in some way or another preparing for the next marathon. So it's been sort of 7 years of some pretty high mileage training where you have a huge appetite. And it's funny, falling pregnant, I sort of felt like I was still fueling a marathoner without the training. I had a pretty healthy appetite to the point where I'd often in the first trimester do the old 3 o'clock, go downstairs to the fridge and just have a little snack because I just couldn't get back to sleep because I was hungry. And so that was probably the only way sleep was disrupted, just because of my appetite. And
maybe you were just rehearsing for 3 a.m. wake-ups.
Yeah, exactly. and I would often wake up just feeling a bit queasy. So I've heard of a lot of people who've had a similar experience to Elsie. The morning sickness is more of an afternoon sickness, but for me it really was. I'd sort of wake up in the morning and feel just a bit off, nauseous, and I'd sort of get out and get some fresh air and have a snack, and that would make me feel better. But if you didn't kind of eat regularly, that nausea would kick in again. So I've had to try and switch my habits a bit to snacking more regularly. I'm typically just a 3 meal a day with a few snacks around training. But you get to this point in the pregnancy and your stomach's obviously it's a bit squashed, so your meals can't be as big. I'm learning that the hard way sometimes. You feel pretty full if you do overeat. But it's kind of applying the same principles to my training. You want to get the best nutrients and fuel in to nourish your baby as well as yourself. And so getting a balanced diet, focusing on at this point, you know, things like iron. You follow the app, you see, you know, at what points you need to get in specific nutrients. And obviously there are a couple of supplements to take along the way, with folate being one in the earlier stages. And I think calcium is sort of starts to become really important as well, particularly going into that breastfeeding phase. So just trying to get all of the good things in and still having some treats. And from a sleep perspective, it's been a bit disrupted in the last week because I'm such a stomach sleeper. I always have been. And I'm now trying to get into the habit of sleeping on my side.
Can we talk about your pregnancy pillow?
Yeah, I was laughing with Elsie. I was in IKEA and I just saw this long lion soft toy and I was like, that looks like a good pregnancy pillow. So I bought it.
You've saved yourself about $200.
Wrapped around a lion at the moment. I can send a photo in for the show notes.
So hang on. If the lion, that actually isn't a pregnancy pillow or it genuinely...
No, it's a child's toy. It's just a large child's stuffed toy. It's all things excellent. Because if you look up the maternity pillows online, like you pay through the nose. It's like saying that you're getting married for something and they jack up the price.
Yeah. And people were just absolute suckers. Like, you know, it has to be that because it's got the word maternity or pregnancy written on it. So I cannot go for anything less. And so they.
Yeah. Jess has just cleaned up from my IKEA. That's
right. We have to see the lion. We'll somehow work out a way to. That image in. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's well covered, Jess. Thank you. Any food crazy cravings or anything?
I've only had aversions, no real cravings. Like I definitely am loving carbs, but it's pretty typical of a marathon too. I was really off peanut butter and like almond butter and Dukkha and things like that for a good couple of months there, which is really unusual for me. I usually love peanut butter and banana on toast and I just couldn't even look at it, and then that kind of faded and I'm back on the nut butter train. But what about you, Els?
Carbs and just like citrus in like mandarins I've been smashing. Also curried egg sandwiches, which I also craved when I was pregnant with Indy, which is so weird. And then I remember, and I'm waiting for this to come on, it hasn't yet, but I remember just needing strawberry milk in the third trimester with Indy. So I'm actually excited about that.
Craving the calcium.
Yeah, craving the calcium.
Amazing how your body tells you what it needs.
Mm.
Very good.
Actually, on that, yogurt is something that I'm like really wanting quite often as well. Not strong cravings, but you just... Yeah, it's like your body pulls you towards
just thinking
it,
about it all the time.
True to go, ladies, one for each of you. Eloise, a lot of women who are pregnant and gaining weight and moving from an athletic physique or an athletic body, or as you say, you know, a body that you've always relied so heavily on to perform, can sometimes struggle with body image issues. So the idea of their body changing, obviously, as they grow their child. Can you touch on a few things that might be helpful to listeners who are actually struggling with their body image and how they feel about themselves, be it their self-confidence, self-esteem, struggling to, adapt to the changes that are occurring physically?
Yeah, I think it's definitely an adjustment, you know, and it's an adjustment for most women. But I think, like I said before, I think for me, it's just been about taking some appreciation in the process that's actually happening inside your body, and knowing that, you know, there's going to be time once you've had the baby to be able to get back into, you know, the level of fitness and the body weight that you want to, or that's healthy for you. But right now I would just try and relax as much as you can and enjoy the process of being pregnant and I think self-compassion is such a big theme, I guess, just practicing self-compassion in this whole process, and there's no judgment. Each woman is going to carry pregnancies differently, and that's what Jess and I were talking about this during the run on Saturday, actually, that, you know, a lot of people say, "Wow, you're showing so much, or you're so big," and the next 5 minutes later, someone will say, "Wow, you're tiny." It's like I just don't think, and it's fine for anyone to say those things. You know, you just got to realize that everybody carries their babies differently, and what's big for someone else might not be for you. And I think just being okay with how you are right now, and practicing self-compassion, and getting out for, you know, if you can, and like we said, you know, you've obviously got to be cleared by your obstetrician or your doctor in terms of what you can do through exercise. If you're not a runner, if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably a runner, but if you're not a runner, you wouldn't start running when you fall pregnant. But I think just doing exercise that makes you happy and that keeps you your well-being really high, and that's physical well-being and mental well-being, and like I said, just practicing the self-compassion rather than the constant judgment of what you should look like or what you expected to look like, or you know, exactly. And I think the comparison thing can be a really dark space to live. And you know, I think it's important just to go, this is how I am when I fall pregnant, and this is awesome. This is perfect. This is how it is. And, you know, and not having to compare yourself to anyone else, or even anyone else's exercise regime as well. Because I see, you know, like, you can follow hundreds of women on Instagram of what they're doing in terms of running, and hundreds of athletes, and you know, it's just really important to do what you know is what you feel is right for you. And your intuition is better than anyone else's in terms of what you want to do for exercise or running that day. And and I think just being sensible with that, and not feeling, again, with the judgment, the whole judgment piece, not comparing yourself, which can cause you know, you to cast judgment over how you do things, or how much weight you've gained, or how much weight you haven't gained, or whatever. I think just trying to, practice that self-compassion and relax through it, and go, this is an absolute miracle, and this is perfect for me, and I'm right where I need to be right now.
Yeah, that's great. That's a really, really, really good advice. And I think, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, ladies, but I think if someone is struggling with the body image aspect of it, reaching out to your GP, your obstetrician, or a psychologist to actually talk through those issues and how you're feeling is probably a really critical thing to do. And those around you who have perhaps been through it and know that you're not alone, and it's okay to feel that way, but there are certainly a lot of support networks around to help you through that stage.
And your body does change, like, quite early on, and you do just need to embrace it. I mean, I went in for my final wedding dress fitting on the Monday of wedding week, and had decided I wasn't going to tell the dressmaker because she'd had a bit of a joke to me a couple of months earlier about how, you know, some brides get pregnant and have to have their, you know, dress changed. And I was like, okay, well, I'm that person, but I'm going to go in and just keep this quiet. Anyway, she was showing Mom how to do up the zip on the day, and she goes, "Oh," she's like, something's changed. And I looked around and I was like, oh, okay. I'm pregnant. And she had a little panic attack and eventually found a bit of extra material on either side of the zip and said, "Can you come in just before the weekend?" And we had to have the dress tweaked in the final few days. But it's all part of the fun and games. And I just feel so grateful to be pregnant, and you do, you know, sometimes you'll just go to put on a crop top or shorts that fitted the week before, and suddenly there's no hope of, you know, them fitting, and you just have to have a little laugh to yourself and be grateful for the situation you're in, and buy something bigger.
Excuse for a shop. That actually does seem like a really nice way to end it. But I just want to ask one more question, Jess. I'll direct this at you. Just if there's a listener out there, a woman who might be pregnant, or perhaps someone listening who knows someone who's pregnant. If you can't run, you're a runner, okay, you love your running, but you can't run. You're pregnant and for whatever reason, it's not happening. What are the exercises you'd recommend? And keep in mind, you know, typical, you know, recreation through to elite runners. We don't really like the gym that much. No one really wants to stink of chlorine. We're not loving life outside of running, but just give us a few, three or four things that they can go and do and get their endorphins, get the heart rate up, do something that's good for themselves and their baby. What do you recommend?
If they're not able to run, I'm not sure if that means they can't walk either. But for me, that was my big go-to, was getting out, putting a good podcast in and going for a walk, because that's why I love running. I love the outdoors, you know, being amongst nature again, the fresh air and whatnot. But to be honest, in the wintry months, I actually sometimes some days it is just so windy and wet out there, the gym seems like a quite appealing option. I think one thing I did was found a gym where there is a really, I guess, motivating atmosphere, and if you can find a gym that, you know, just has one of those positive vibes, and you go in, and either the elliptical or the bike can be quite nice options. And actually, if you're used to doing running sessions, just mimicking your running sessions on the cross trainer. So you don't just go out and do, say, a straight 30 or 40 minutes. You actually start with a 10-minute warm-up, and then you do your little fartlecky bits, and it can break it up really nicely. And again, if you're listening to a nice podcast, it helps to, you know, fire you up. That's a bonus. But the other big one is swimming. I mean, I'm not a swimmer really. I grew up, and that was, you know, my parents' business was teaching, mum taught people to swim, and it's just never really felt natural to me, and it still doesn't. But I've just been taking a floaty in and just kicking laps, and then I'll go to the edge of the pool and do some kicking at the edge of the pool, either on my front or my back, and then even just doing some running arms and legs through the water, so you're kind of mimicking running but in the water. And you can do that outdoors too if you're brave. But yeah, there are a few that I'd recommend.
Yeah, great advice. That's great. Girls, I'm going to wrap up there our deep dive on running while pregnant, and I've learned heaps actually. In summary, I think it's just a few key take homes is just roll with it, you know, take it day by day and week by week. Certainly seek the advice and the guidance from your women's health physiotherapist, your obstetrician, your general practitioner. Reach out for advice and support from those around you, but appreciate, you know, the incredible thing that the female body is doing. Don't compare yourselves to others, and just, yeah, really enjoy the process, but practicing much compassion on yourself and knowing that you will get back to your exercise and your running, and this is just a really precious snapshot in time that probably should be enjoyed for what it is, without worrying too much about what's happening to your fitness and your next race, and just looking forward to meeting your baby. So thank you, ladies, very much.
Pleasure. Can I please just add something really quick to the gym training, cross training before as well?
Please.
Something that I'm sure any health professional will advise on, but just to make sure people know, trying to avoid overheating is really important. And in some gyms, there isn't great sort of fans or ventilation. So just making sure that you don't let yourself get too hot. And obviously the guidelines do say moderate exercise as well. So not kind of hitting your high heart rates. I think they suggest not getting over sort of 70% of your max. So they're just two important little things to keep in mind if you are doing the cross training indoors.
That's really good advice. Heart rate, especially winter. Like, you think everything's going to be cold, but some of those gyms do pump the heat. So if that's the case at your local gym, maybe just pick another one.
Yeah. Or get the fan right beside you.
Very good. Ladies, you've been amazing today. It's been an absolute delight to share the podcast space with you. So thank you for giving up your time. In terms of a little bit of housekeeping. We are asking listeners to send in your listener questions. Keep in mind, we've got some amazing content that we're rolling out over the next few months, everything from iron deficiency, stress fractures in runners, everything to do with the menstrual cycle, relative energy deficit in sport. We've got stacks and stacks of content. So by all means, send your questions in. If we don't directly answer your question, it probably means that we're about to roll out something relating to that content. But if there are questions, even on, you know, past topics, like, by all means, send in something about running while pregnant that we haven't answered and we can get to that, or touching on what we talked about in our first episode relating to safety. So we warmly welcome all listener questions, and we'll certainly get to them, but there is a plethora of information and content to come with this podcast, and we look forward to having everyone along for the ride. Ladies, I'll let you go. We're going to wrap it up.
Thank you
so much. All the best.
Yes, thank you.
Girls, what are your due dates? Jess, you're November the 13th, are you, roughly?
Yes. You nailed it.
they do say to you, like, it's an approximate, don't they? Elsie, when are you due?
I'm due on the 24th of November.
Oh, my gosh, that's so close to each other. That's brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah. Special.
20th of November, there you go. Both have babies. Thanks for your time, girls, and we'll speak very soon.
Thanks.
A black blood in my veins. I found out when I was just a child that your skin can bring you so much pain. Now I hear you say you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes and tell me if you take my place? Under the cover of my skin. Doesn't matter.